Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Employees and Review of Discrimination Filings Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 2, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Klokner v. Solis. This case considers whether the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, or a U.S. District Court, has jurisdiction over decisions of the Merit Systems Protection Board when a federal employee both disputes or termination and brings a claim of unlawful discrimination, and the board resolves her case without reaching the merits of her discrimination claims. To discuss the case, we have Christopher Bryant, who is a professor of law at the University of Cincinnati College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bryant.
On Tuesday, October 2nd, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the matter of Klokner v. Solis. The case presents a jurisdictional question arising out of the collision of three major federal employment statutes: the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, and the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978. Among other things, the third of these three statutes created a Merit Systems Protection Board to hear and resolve federal employee objections to qualifying adverse action, in Klokner's case, termination. When a federal employee asserts a claim of discrimination forbidden by Title VII, the ADA, or any other qualifying federal statute or administrative rule, in connection with an objection to a qualifying adverse action appealable to the Merit Systems Protection Board, the case is deemed a mixed case. In Klokner, the specific issue raised was whether the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit or the U.S. District Courts have jurisdiction in mixed cases resolved by the board on some basis other than the merits of the discrimination claim. For example, in Klokner, the board dismissed her appeal on the ground that it was time-barred by failure to comply with a refiling deadline. If all this sounds confusing, that's because it is confusing. Call the procedural path presented to employees in mixed cases Byzantine would be grossly unfair to Byzantium. One member of the Merit Systems Protection Board has observed that even Theseus, who of course achieved the marvel of escaping the labyrinth after slaying the Minotaur, would have been, quoting, hard-pressed to find his way through the convoluted maze of overlapping jurisdiction which marks the mixed-case area where federal discrimination and personnel law intersect. In a spirit of mercy to the reader, I will forbear from recounting every twist and turn in the tortuous path Ms. Klokner's claim followed on its way to the High Court. For our purposes, I hope it will suffice to keep in mind three key facts. Number one, Klokner pursued a mixed case, that is, a case challenging an adverse action appealable to the Merit Systems Protection Board and also alleging discrimination forbidden by a federal statute. Number two, the Merit Systems Protection Board dismissed her appeal as untimely filed without addressing the merits of her discrimination claim. And number three, the Eighth Circuit later dismissed her subsequently filed suit in U.S. District Court on the ground that the Federal Circuit was the only venue for further proceedings in her case. As to the last point, the exclusive jurisdiction of the Federal Circuit, the plain import of the relevant statutory text seems to say otherwise, at least at first glance to this novice. 5 U.S.C. Section 7703, the statutory provision assigning the Federal Circuit exclusive jurisdiction over most appeals from the board, makes an exception for cases of discrimination subject to the provisions of Section 7702 of this title, which are to be filed in the U.S. District Court. In turn, 7702 governs cases in which the employee, and I'm quoting, alleges that a basis for the action was prohibited discrimination, unquote. Thus, it would seem when read together, Section 7702 and 7703 of Title V send cases like Klokner's, which include allegations that an adverse action was the result of prohibited discrimination, to the district court, not to the federal circuit. Further, it appears that this should be so regardless of whether the Merit System Protection Board's decision rested on a merits determination of the discrimination claim or on some other basis. The difficulty is that opening the district courts to MSPB mixed cases resolved on a non-merits basis arguably threatens to undermine an overarching goal of the Civil Service Reform Act, namely, to achieve clarity and uniformity in the law governing civil service dispositions on all grounds other than prohibited discrimination. The goal of consistency and certainty as to threshold or procedural questions, such as timeliness, in MSPB proceedings would be undermined if some portion of board rulings on these bases were reviewed by multifarious district courts instead of the Federal Circuit. It is said that this would defeat a core purpose of vesting the Federal Circuit with jurisdiction in all non-discrimination MSPB cases. Or so reasoned the Eighth Circuit, following the Federal Circuit's prior ruling in the case of Ballantyne v. the MSPB. And, in Cloker, so argued the government. And in fairness, the government is not without textual ammunition of its own. The Solicitor General's brief in Cloker stressed that the exception in 7703, permitting district court jurisdiction in cases of discrimination, applied to judicial reviewable actions under 7702. That is, only applied to judicial reviewable actions under 7702. According to the SG, an employee's case does not become a judicial reviewable action under 7702 unless the MSPB ruled on the merits of the employee's discrimination claim. In support of this position, the government points to Section 7702A1B5, which directs the board to decide the issue of discrimination. No decision on the issue of discrimination, says the government, then no judicially reviewable action under 7702. Counsel for Cloker replies that when considered in the context of all of 7702, a final MSPB ruling is a judicially reviewable action regardless of the basis for that decision, and that in the alternative, in any event, the judicially reviewable action language of 7703 creates an exhaustion requirement, not a bar on district court jurisdiction. Questioning an oral argument suggested that at least some of the justices were sympathetic to Cloker's plain meaning argument and skeptical of the government's restrictive reading of the phrase reviewable action under 7702. The Chief Justice observed that, I'm quoting, "We review cases on procedural objections all the time, and we think of those as judicially reviewable. It's a real stretch to say simply because it's judicially reviewable, it means judicially reviewable on the merits." Later, the Chief Justice also described the government's reading of the statute as a tough argument. Justice Kagan described the government's construction as a counterintuitive way to read the statutory language and attributing to Congress a remarkably strange way of accomplishing its apparent objective. Justices Breyer, Alito, and Sotomayor also expressed doubts about the government's interpretation. This is not to say that it was all smooth sailing for Cloker's counsel. Eric Schnapper of the University of Washington School of Law, several justices expressed concerns about anomalies his interpretation might raise as well, but the whole tenor of the argument reflected a commitment to finding the best reading of the text, giving little if any weight to the argument that Cloker's interpretation would frustrate the purpose of the CSRA. So this case then appears to boil down to a contest between textualism and purposivism or legal process approaches to statutory interpretation. And if I'm right, in this case, rigid adherence to textualism seems, in my humble opinion, to favor Cloker more than the government. I would be remiss were I not to add that both lawyers, Schnapper for Cloker and Sarah Harrington for the government, were masterful in oral argument. One has to penetrate a fairly thick layer of technicality to follow the argument closely, but once one has done so, the reward is an example of oral argument as a form of art. If you've made it this far, assuming, kind listener, you even exist, thank you for your attention. I would love to hear your thoughts on the case and my treatment thereof. I can be reached at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, dot Bryant, B-R-Y-A-N-T, at uc.edu. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.